Hello once again, everybody, and thank you for joining me here on this Tuesday, January 2nd edition of Bang the Book Radio. My name is Adam Burke, your host for the next hour and 10, hour and 15 minutes or so as we go over all kinds of things in the world of sports from a betting focus. Happy to have you with me as we kick off 2018 here on Bang the Book Radio. My two regular Monday guests joined me on Tuesday this week, but we are going to flip them here. The first one, Kyle Hunter from huntersportspicks.com. We'll do our college football first look slash handicapping the hybrid segment. And then second on today's show here, Joe Everett from NFL Draft Bible for our NFL weekend review and wild card weekend preview. I almost called him Kyle Everett. Gives you an idea of how things are going here coming out of the holiday weekend. But lots of stuff to get to on today's show. Great college football weekend to recap. And of course, looking ahead to the NFL playoffs, which we're doing both of those things over at bangthebook.com. Lots of great content for you over there to check out. I wrote up a national championship game preview here this morning. Also wrote up a golf preview for the Century Tournament of Champions as golf makes its return here this week. Got all four NFL wildcard weekend games previewed as well. Also over the weekend, I guess I just felt like writing a little bit. Put together my baseball Hall of Fame ballot for 2018. Obviously, there's not a whole lot of betting impact there with that, but something I just wanted to scribble down for you. So if you're interested in checking that out, please make sure that you do. Also catch my betting resolutions piece that I posted late last week over there at bangthebook.com, still up on the front page right now. So you can check that out as well. We've got NBA, NHL, college basketball, situational betting articles, so much stuff over there. We are your one-stop shop for sports betting news and information. Check out our contest page. Start the new year off with those free contests. Try to pick up some cash prizes in those. Don't forget about our sportsbook reviews over at bangthebook.com as well. And also that DSI sportsbook promo code BTB25. Get you a $25 free bet just for signing up. 100% deposit match bonus for the sportsbook and 100% deposit match bonus for the live casino. At BetDSI, it's only a game until you bet it. Two guests coming your way here on today's program. The first, Mr. Kyle Hunter from huntersportspicks.com. Kyle, how's it going today, man?
Doing all right, man. How about that Rose Bowl yesterday? What a game.
What a game. And you know what? I think I made a real plus EV decision by going to bed at halftime of the Alabama-Clemson game. It was a long weekend. I wanted to make sure that I wasn't a zombie today. And looks like I probably made the right call there with that one.
Yeah, you did. Everything went downhill after that Rose Bowl.
Yeah, it definitely did. That game, of course, going to double overtime, an instant classic. And you know what was really funny about that game as we, you know, sort of look ahead to the national championship is at halftime, I'm texting anybody that will listen about my man crush on Lincoln Riley, about the game plan that he called in the first half, the way he was moving Georgia's linebackers around, the way he was keeping their safeties just completely confused back there. The second half was a dramatically different game. Lincoln Riley's play calling took a major tumble. Oklahoma just couldn't do anything on first and second down, put themselves in lots of long third downs. Mel Tucker's Georgia defense just was able to get there with pressure, was able to, you know, stretch plays out and keep them behind the line of scrimmage. That was a dramatically different second half in that game.
Yeah, it was. You know, Lincoln Riley's definitely a good play caller. He made some bad play calls in the second half and in overtime of that game, but he's still a really good young mind. I think that, you know, he's going to do a really good job moving forward. You know, I think he tightened up a little bit. I think, you know, everything that was working really well early on, they didn't quite pull the trigger on some of those plays later in the game. Got really conservative in overtime. Felt like he kind of took the ball out of Baker Mayfield's hands there for a little while. A lot of running plays, settling for a field goal, things like that. When they had been so good earlier, it was kind of surprising he'd do that. Like I said, having said that, I really do think he's a good coach and he's a really good mind. I think he'll be fine in the long term. But, you know, it seemed like as things tightened up, he changed the way he was calling that game, and I think that was a mistake. I will say Georgia really had the intensity there in that second half, and I like that Kirby Smart kind of said at halftime, my guys weren't ready for this game. You know, I got to do a better job getting them ready for this. You know, good on him for calling himself out. You know, he went ahead and said, you know, I didn't do a good enough job, but they sure made the adjustments at halftime. I came out in the second half, did a lot better. I was really surprised Georgia threw the ball so much in the first half. You know, they got back to running it more often in the second half, and then obviously, you know, their freshman quarterback just played really well as well. So, you know, it'll be interesting because Georgia is up against a much better defense next week in Alabama than they were yesterday. So we'll see. You know, I think it should be an interesting game.
You know, there's a lot to unpack from this Rose Bowl and on a lot of different fronts. And one of the things that you mentioned what Kirby Smart said going into the halftime of, I just didn't have our team ready to play. I need to do a better job of preparing my guys. How the hell are you supposed to prepare for Oklahoma? How do you prepare for that tempo? You don't have a scout team quarterback that has anywhere near the arm talent of Baker Mayfield. You know, it's really hard to prepare for a game like that. And once Georgia saw what Oklahoma was doing, and things did get a little bit out of control for them in the first half, kind of that whole snowball effect, but they get that field goal on that failed squib kick that kind of gave them a little bit of momentum going into the second half, a little bit of a breather to say, okay, we're not down three possessions, we're down two possessions. And then by the end of the third quarter, it was a tie game. So, you know, for Kirby Smart here, once he saw what Oklahoma was going to do, once he saw some of those blocking schemes, once he figured out some of the pre-snap reads and all that, you know, that's when Georgia made those adjustments. And kudos to them for that. I know they still gave up 48 points, but they gave up 375 yards in the first half of this game. They gave up, I think, 152 or something like that throughout the rest of the game when I wrote up my preview this morning. So, you know, they made those adjustments. Oklahoma had that defensive touchdown, had that one drive, but that was it. That was all that they did, you know, in the second half and in overtime. So kudos to Georgia, you know, for the adjustments that they were able to make. I'll say this. I'm going to write a pretty big piece over at bangthebook.com here, probably later on this week or certainly next week after the national championship game, looking at the whole concept of the bowl bounce, because that is a very real thing going into the next season. I know Oklahoma lost this game, and I know that that's very disappointing for them, disappointing for Baker Mayfield who's going on to the NFL. But long term, what this game means for Oklahoma is off the charts. You had a ton of high school recruits watching this game saying, I want to play in this system. I want to play for that guy. I want to play for Lincoln Riley. Then if you're a defensive player, you look at this and you say, okay, you know, what they can do on offense is going to take them to these types of heights. If I go here and play defense, I can have an impact. I can win a national championship with this team. So now Oklahoma's, they're going to keep having the offensive windfall from Lincoln Riley. But I think if you're a defensive player, and you watch what that offense looks like, you watch the talent that's there with a young quarterback like Kyler Murphy, a freshman running back like Rodney Anderson, you say, I want to go and play there. I want to play in this conference, the Big 12, where Oklahoma is going to be a top team year in and year out. I want to be on this national stage. And, yeah, it sucks to lose yesterday's game. It's definitely a bummer for Sooners fans. But long term, this game means a lot for the sustainability of their program. And unless Lincoln Riley opts to go to the NFL or something like that, I know he's only 34 years old, it's not going to get much better for him than this job, I don't think. So, you know, they're really, really set up nicely for the future. And it's something that eases the pain here on Tuesday morning.
Yeah, I agree with you. You know, he's a really good young coach, and they're going to continue to recruit really well, like you say. And certainly I think the biggest point of that is that if you're a defensive guy, you think, you know, I can really help this team get to that next step, you know, because if Oklahoma had a better defense, they would have been a team to beat here. And, you know, maybe that recruiting windfall will lead to them having that better defense. You know, I think Oklahoma is going to be in good shape in future years, like you said. You know, certainly that it stings to lose that kind of game. So I'm sure Oklahoma fans aren't feeling too good today, but they do have a bright future ahead of them.
All right, so then there's the Sugar Bowl. We go from the 54-48 game here to the 24-6 game. And, yeah, it wasn't sexy, and I only watched the first half of this game, so I can't speak to anything that happened in the second half, although we will mention the Anfernee Jennings injury with this sprained knee. He's going for an MRI. Not a great thing for Alabama here going into this game against Georgia to possibly be down two of their starting linebackers coming into the season. But, you know, for Alabama, it wasn't sexy. It wasn't pretty. I don't think they wanted it to be. I think this is exactly the type of game that Nick Saban wanted to play. Wanted to go out there, shut down Kelly Bryant, shut down the Clemson running game. And like I talked about last week, the way to beat Alabama is to throw it around the yard on them. it's to throw for 400 yards like Deshaun Watson did each of the last two meetings between these two teams. Now, obviously, Clemson only won one of them, but, you know, they move the ball with ease. Kelly Bryant can't throw like that. Kelly Bryant just doesn't have that type of raw talent in his right arm to throw. He's a good runner, and he's a pretty smart quarterback who generally takes care of the football, but he just can't make some of those throws that Deshaun Watson can, and it was really, really evident last night in that game.
Yeah, you know, I had Clemson yesterday, and that was a bad pick by me. I should have had the under in that game. I leaned both to Clemson and the under. I ended up taking Clemson. I've had a good bowl season, a really good football season in general, college football especially. But, you know, that I think that was a bad pick by me, just thinking about the fact that it was such a big downgrade from Deshaun Watson to Kelly Bryant. You know, I think I underrated how much that meant, and last night showed that. You know, I think Clemson had, what, 7 or 8 first downs going into that final drive where they picked up a bunch of first downs and then ended up not scoring from, like, the 4-yard line on fourth down. Clemson couldn't do anything. They didn't have a first down in the first quarter. You know, Alabama's offense didn't really do that much in this game, but they didn't have to. You know, they had 261 yards of offense. Clemson's defense played fine here. Clemson had 188 yards of offense, and I think a good 70, 80 yards of that was kind of in mop-up time there at the end of the game. So Clemson just couldn't do anything on offense. They were really fortunate to be down only 10-3, and then they got that early field goal in the second half, down 10-6 after the turnover, and then get the ball back, and they're driving the other way. That interception that went the other way, and then they got a touchdown pretty quick off of it, and then a pick six right away. Heartbreakers for Clemson, but I don't think there was any way they were going to win this game. Alabama's defense came to play really, really well in this game. I was really impressed with their physicality. You know, Alabama's very balanced on defense. They don't really have a weakness that you can exploit. I think in the past, as you say, the one thing that you've been able to do against them is if you have a really mobile quarterback who can also throw it around, that's kind of the way to beat them. Deshaun Watson was that, and like you say, even when they lost that game, they really ran up the yardage count against Alabama, but Kelly Bryant wasn't that. The question to me is, does Georgia have that ability either? Because Georgia is that smash-mouth football, you know, just running down your throat type team. Alabama's never really been beaten that way. You know, I think if Georgia just lines up and runs it down their throat successfully over and over again, I think they'd be the first team I've seen be able to do that against Alabama.
All right, so let's talk about that national championship game here next Monday. And, of course, I'll be able to talk about my thoughts throughout the week. And as we get deeper into the week, this game is a lot like the Super Bowl in that offshore you've got a lot of prop betting opportunities. So that'll be something that we talk about with some of our guests as we go throughout the week here. Obviously, none of those prop betting lines are up right now. But, you know, this looks like a game where it may not be the most exciting for prop betting. You've got Alabama, a 4.5-point favorite, total open 47.5, came down into the 46, 45.5 range. So, again, not expecting a whole lot of points here in this one. So you may want to look at some defensive props and things of that sort here. But it sounds to me, Kyle, like you're sort of looking at Alabama here, you know, given what we know about this matchup and what Georgia needs to do in order to have success.
You know, I don't think I'm going to play a side in this game. I think I'll play the total. You know, to me, it's hard to take Georgia here, though. Georgia's coming off that double overtime win that was extremely emotional. I think it's a tough spot to get right off the mat and not right off the mat. It's more of a letdown spot, I should say, but you know, you got to get back up for a team like Alabama that plays so physical. Georgia put a lot into that game yesterday. I know Bama had a physical game as well against Clemson, but emotionally, they knew they were going to win that game. I feel like, you know, it's a difficult spot for Georgia. Having said that, it is the title game. I know they're going to be motivated. I'm not worried about their motivation level. It's more of a, you know, can they play that well like they did in the second half against Oklahoma 2 times in a row? And they're obviously playing against a team that has even more talent than Oklahoma. So, to me, it's hard to take Georgia here. I don't think you're getting any great line value taking Alabama -4.5. I'm curious to see where this line goes. You know, I think that The betting public would probably be more likely to take Alabama minus the points here. I know there's some sharps that are going to like Georgia in this game. I don't blame them for that, you know, taking the points when it's a low total like this. I just feel like it's a difficult spot here for Georgia. Alabama's been here so many times before. Georgia hasn't. Georgia has a freshman quarterback. It would be hard for me to take Georgia here.
Well, and to factor into the spot as well, Georgia played in Pasadena yesterday, had to come all the way back to Athens. And then, of course, they do have the short trip to Atlanta here for the national championship game. But, you know, today is a totally wasted day, not for the coaches, because the coaches were game planning on the flight back and all that. But for the players, you're not going to do much today. So you're going to play tomorrow. When do you have to go to Atlanta and go through all of the media availability and all the fanfare and the hoopla that goes along with this game? That's a really difficult thing, to say the least, for this Georgia team here in this spot. And Alabama, of course, playing in New Orleans last night, a place that they're very accustomed to playing. Short trip back to Tuscaloosa. You know, a lot of these guys have been through those that required media availability and all that type of stuff. Georgia doesn't have that. And also, you look at Jake Fromm, as you mentioned, freshman quarterback. Well, he's in the spotlight now. He's a guy that the media is going to want to talk to. At least the older guys like Sony Michel, Nick Chubb, Roquan Smith, they're used to this type of thing. They've talked to people about the NFL draft, or they've been out there in front of the media before. Fromm really hasn't been. So maybe that is something that does hurt them a little bit. Here's the thing, though. For me right now, as I'm looking at this game, it's Georgia or nothing to me. Like you said, I don't think there's a whole lot of line value on Alabama. What really concerns me about the Crimson Tide here is their offense is not good. I mean, I know that they were, what, 13th in yards per play or whatever the hell they were. They had 41 on Fresno, 41 on Colorado State, 59 on Vanderbilt, 66 on Ole Miss, 41 on Arkansas, 45 on Tennessee, 56 on Mercer. That's great. Good. Those are teams you should run it up against. 24 against Florida State, and Florida State played about as bad as they could possibly play offensively in that game, plus DeAndre Francois went down. 27 on A&M in a game that was very, very close. 24 on LSU, 14 on Auburn. Didn't do much against Clemson yesterday. Alabama didn't have a scoring drive of more than 47 yards in that game. I don't like this Alabama offense. I like that they take care of the football. Jalen Hurts only threw one pick this year. But Brian Daboll is not a college offensive coordinator to me. I don't know how creative the game plan is going to be here. I think Georgia stacks up really well against the Alabama offensive line. And if you want to match the front seven, you know, against the running backs and the offensive line for Alabama, I think this matchup sets up pretty well for Georgia. The problem is, as you alluded to, these aren't the types of teams that beat Alabama. It's not a team that wants to run between the tackles, do a play-action passing game. You know, it's a team like Auburn that's going to go sideline to sideline, has a mobile quarterback in Stidham. You know, that's not what Georgia is. And I'm just not entirely sure, you know, how the Georgia offense stacks up and how many points they'll have to get, you know, to keep this one close.
Yeah, and then you've got the factor of Saban against his former assistants. And I don't know how much you want to, you know, read into this one. It's a stat that you're going to hear all kinds of times between now and the game on ESPN. But, you know, Saban's 11-0 against his assistant coaches, and the average score in this game is 38-10, Bama. You know, certainly Nick Saban's a really good coach. I think Kirby Smart will do a good job getting his team ready. I agree with what you said, that Alabama doesn't really have that explosive offense. You know, they've been able to grind away these wins against good teams, but not really a big play offense. They certainly have a good offensive line, good running backs. Hurts is a quality quarterback. I think what you said there about their offensive coordinator, Daboll, is probably the biggest problem to me. I don't think he's very aggressive with the play calling, and you know, they can get a little bit predictable at times. But, you know, the question is how much do you think Georgia is going to score here? Because I think we should keep an eye on that injury for Alabama. You know, their linebacker spot is where they're a little bit thin right now to start with. So they need to be healthy there. But in general, I think Alabama's defense is obviously really, really good. Georgia's offense has got to try to run the football here. Jake Fromm played really well yesterday. I don't think he can play that well against Alabama. So I really think that Georgia has to be able to run the football here, and we'll see if they can.
All right, we'll transition over to college basketball side here. We will talk extensively about the national championship game throughout the week here on the show. And, of course, we can touch on it again Monday on the day of the game and hit this line movement again and sort of talk about that a little bit more. Well, actually, I guess now that I think about it, I did have a listener question here regarding this game. So I do want to throw this out because I told him I would. At @Seavert_3 has got Georgia to win the national championship at +340. Bama's money line out there. You know, you can shop around for the best price that you can find with them favored by 4, somewhere in the 200 to 220 range, that type of thing. Asking if he should hedge now or if he should wait. You know, obviously, this is a question of if Georgia money is going to come in or not. What do you think, Kyle? I mean, I don't know exactly where this line is going to go either, so I'm not sure I've got a great answer. I don't know if it's just a risk management question or what, because, I mean, how much better does this Bama money line get, do you think?
It's a hard question. You know, 60% of the bets so far on Bama, 71% of the money's on Bama. You know, if it were me, if you could get a -210, -205, something like that, I think I'd go ahead and take it. Sometimes you can get the money line late right before the game, though, coming down even when the spread doesn't, because bettors like to take the money line underdog. So this is a little bit of a tricky question because I don't really think the line will go toward Georgia. But maybe the money line gets a little bit better. You know, I think getting a -200 is a possibility. I see a lot of -220 right now. Certainly, you have to hedge that. And obviously, he wants to based on the question. And it's just a question of whether you're going to be able to get a better price or not. You know, if it were me, if you could find a -210 or something here in the next couple of days, I think I'd go ahead and take it.
Well, and another consideration, too, that I think is really difficult is that, you know, live betting now throws a wrench into so many things. I mean, if you were live betting that Rose Bowl yesterday, it was certainly interesting, especially in the second half. You know, you were able to get some very, very good numbers there. If Georgia scores first in this game, if Georgia gets the ball, runs that scripted drive, because keep in mind, everyone's going to have that scripted drive in the first half with that first possession. If Georgia goes down and gets 3 or 7, you know, then live, you're going to get a better price than what you're looking at pregame, obviously. So that's another consideration too. And I can't imagine, you know, a +340 ticket on Georgia is that high of a wager amount. So, you know, when you talk about the limits for live betting and that type of thing, you know, I'm sure you could still put a considerable amount down to hedge that +340 and maybe get it into -125, -130 range if it's a field goal or, you know, something like that. So that's always a consideration too. Now, obviously the problem is if Bama marches down and scores and Georgia's playing catch up, well, you lost your chance to hedge. You're going to basically cancel out your futures ticket. So it's all about risk tolerance. It's all about, you know, what you personally want to do. But, you know, I mean, I think if you want to hedge part of it pregame and then maybe look for a better number in game, that's probably an option as well.
Yeah, I was going to say that too. I wouldn't wait on everything for the end game, but I could see, you know, taking half of your bet size that you want to make and making it before the game and then waiting for the other half. The end game wagering is a good angle to look at. I think that, you know, it just depends on your risk tolerance, like you said, because there's obviously a chance that Bama just takes it right down the field, goes up 7-0. You know, I assume both teams would defer to the second half and miss the game, so it just kind of depends on who wins the coin toss. But, you know, to me, you know, this is a spot where if you've got that kind of ticket, you're in a good position. So, you know, you just got to try to find the best price you can pregame. And then if you want to wait for some of it for in-game, I don't blame you.
All right. Now we will actually transition over to the college basketball side. And that is a question at @Seavert_3 that I will ask throughout the week here on the show and get some different opinions on it. I am going to put you on the spot here for a second, Kyle. Something that we didn't mention in our notes and our little back and forth before the show here. I know we like to talk about under the radar teams. UC Riverside fired its head coach last night. What sort of impact do you think that has on, I believe they're the Highlanders here over the next little while?
Yeah, the Highlanders, that's an interesting move. You don't see that happen very often at all, especially, you know, they haven't really even gotten into league play. I don't think, you know, this is the type of move that you see hardly ever. To me, you know, this is just a program that's really been kind of lost. They play in a really weak conference to start with, in the Big West. And here they are about to play their first league game here on Wednesday. And he's fired. I think the reason he was fired, I don't know exactly what it was. I think it was 20-0 or something like that to start the game in Seattle. I know there was a screenshot of it on Twitter the other day from somebody who was at the game in Seattle, and it was kind of being retweeted across social media. So that didn't help him at all, certainly. You know, UC Riverside, the type of team where I don't think their upside's too high. They're kind of a veteran team that's just not very good. You know, they beat Cal in the first game, 74-66, but Cal's really not very good. And Cal's lost to some bad teams and been upset multiple times throughout the course of the season. You know, what would I want to do with UC Riverside right now? I wouldn't touch them. You know, I either fade them or stay away from their games because, you know, you're getting a different system, and I certainly wouldn't want to jump into backing them right away.
All right, well, we're going to look at one conference here in depth today. We've been trying to do this whenever we possibly can and sort of get a good lay of the land in some of these leagues, because one of the things that we talk about here a lot on this show, conference specialization is something that you should try to subscribe to. With 351 college basketball teams, it's really hard to know about all of them. And obviously, you know, not all of them are lined. Maybe 220, 230 or so are lined on a regular basis. But now that we're in conference play, if you can really narrow your focus a little bit here, take advantage of some of these mid-major and then even the low-major conferences, something that should be very beneficial for you. Today, we're going to take a look at the Missouri Valley Conference, which, you know, as you talked about coming into the season, as we've discussed a little bit here already, without Wichita State, you know, this isn't the conference that it once was. But without Wichita State, it opens up opportunity for a lot of other teams.
Yeah, this is a much more wide-open league. Wichita State was clearly the best team, you know, multiple seasons here lately. Now you have a race for the top. It's going to be pretty interesting. I think Missouri State's the best team in this conference. It seemed to be Elise Johnson, really a star there for that team. Not too many teams in this conference have a star like Missouri State does, and I think Missouri State's balance on both sides of the ball makes them the best team in this league. I think it's interesting as you have a newcomer here in Valparaiso. You know, a really tough start for them here in the conference, but we talked about this one a few times. Tevin Walker, he's back now playing for Mono, but it takes a long time to come back and be ready to go after having Mono, and he came back in their first game there in the Missouri Valley, and they've lost both of those games. I think Valpo is going to be okay. They're going to still win some games against good teams. You know, you look at the depth of this conference, they're very, very deep. You know, there's really not a bad team in this conference. I would say Evansville and Drake have the least talent in this conference. I think both of them have really good coaches, though. And Nico Medved is really doing a tremendous job already with Drake. He's done a good job in the past as well. And he comes over to Drake this year. Medved had done a really nice job at Furman, taking a Furman team that had been awful. They were 9-21 when he started at Furman, 23-12 last year. So Medved's proven himself as a really good coach. I think that Drake's still undervalued by the odds makers right now. So that's a team that, you know, if you're getting points, whether it be on the road or at home, you got to lean toward Drake here because they've proven that they can keep games close against quality teams, and I think they'll be able to do that again the rest of the season. To me, Northern Iowa is a team that's way down. I think they'll probably finish 500 or worse here in the league this year. And you're used to Northern Iowa kind of being the second-best team behind Wichita State. So most people would think right away, you know, this is an opportunity for Northern Iowa. The problem for Northern Iowa this year is they don't have any really good player in the backcourt. They had Wes Washburn a couple of years ago, Jeremy Morgan last year that was kind of a do-everything player. Now they don't have that guy in the backcourt. They're a team that plays really slowly, and usually they would win based on the fact that they played solid defense, took care of the basketball, and now they don't take care of the basketball. So if you're having too many turnovers and you don't shoot the ball very well, it's hard to win games. You know, they're going to have a lot of really low-scoring games. The odds makers are all over that. They're going to have really low totals on Northern Iowa every single game. But to me, Northern Iowa is a team that could still be a little bit overvalued by the odds makers. You know, another team that I think has improved a lot from last year is Bradley. you know, Bradley a couple of years ago was playing all kinds of freshmen, just everybody freshmen. You know, now those guys are juniors. They have a really good defense, and they have a good coach in Brian Wardle. You know, he's done a good job in the past at Wisconsin Green Bay, came over to Bradley. I think Bradley is still undervalued by the odds makers as well. So that's a team that I've looked to back here. And one thing to keep in mind here in the Missouri Valley Conference, home court advantage means a lot in this conference. You have a lot of really small venues that are really packed. You know, there's people that love college basketball here. You have Indiana teams in this conference, obviously Indiana. Everybody loves basketball. You got Indiana State, which I didn't even mention Indiana State. I think they're probably one of the, you know, bottom three or four teams in this conference, but it shows you how deep this conference is, because Indiana State goes to Indiana and wins 90-69 in the season opener. So, you know, you have a lot of teams in this conference that are capable of beating anybody on one day. Having said that, I don't think that there's really one team from the Missouri Valley this year that is that type of team that can really make a deep run in March Madness. So I think you have a deep conference, but I don't think there's any really good team here in the Missouri Valley this year.
I like that you brought up the coaching, because coaching is so important in a league like this where, you know, a lot of these teams are pretty comparable. As you said, you've got a lot of teams that are pretty equal. You don't have a team that's clearly the worst or clearly the best. You think Missouri Valley or Missouri State, probably the one that's going to emerge from this league. But if you've got comparable talent, but a coaching advantage, but then maybe you can make some noise. And then maybe that's part of the reason why a team like Drake off to a 2-0 start here, including a win over Bradley in conference play. You know, they've got that coach. And if you've got that coach and you've got comparable talent with the other teams in the league, you know, the guy that can elevate that talent is something you definitely want to look to back, and also something that may have, you know, long-term implications 2-3 years down the road for however long that he's there. Because it seems like a guy like Medved certainly on track to, you know, move up to a Power 5 job here in college basketball. So a good look there at the Missouri Valley. And let's look at a couple of games coming up here later on this week. And, you know, as we talk about, we really love to go under the radar here on this show. And of course, now that we'll be focusing on college basketball full time after next week's national championship game, we're going to do some more of that and make sure that you're ready for those conference tournaments in late February and early March. But let's go to Northern Arizona and Weber State out in the Big Sky Conference. There's an angle that you're really looking at here.
Yeah, Weber State's coach Randy Ray is a really good coach. You know, I would rate him the top coach in this conference. They've proven year after year Weber State to be a very good team, regardless who they have. You know, he's able to coach up his teams. Weber State still has quality talent. They have not played up to their potential so far this year. And Randy Ray called out his team publicly in the media after their home loss to Idaho State last game. You can actually watch that online. It's about a 2-minute clip where Randy Ray just says, you know, he doesn't say it harshly or anything. He just kind of says, this team is just not what they should be at this point. They don't have the toughness. They don't have the grit that they should have. And, you know, now we're going to see what they're made of, because Weber State loses at home to Idaho State and not a very good team. I think now that they're challenged in that way, you have a Weber State team that has a lot more talent than most teams in this Big Sky Conference. I think it's going to be really interesting to see how they respond in this game. The other thing I like about this one is Northern Arizona is coming off an overtime loss at home to Montana State. So Northern Arizona is a team that's not going to win many games at all this year. Probably the worst team in the Big Sky. Northern Arizona is going to take a lot of lumps this season. They've already been beaten badly by multiple teams. You know, this is a team that lost by 32 points to Santa Clara on the road. So now you catch them going to Weber State, coming off an overtime loss. Weber State really upset. Their coach certainly zeroing in on, you know, every single game at this point. They're not going to overlook anybody. Weber State's going to be favored by quite a bit in this game, probably 11, 12 points. But the only way I'd look at this game is taking Weber State. I'll certainly consider laying the points myself. I don't like laying double digits. I do think this is a spot where Weber State should play much better. This is a Weber State team that's played a pretty decent schedule considering, you know, Big Sky Conference now. Most of the teams in the Big Sky have played a really poor schedule. Northern Arizona has actually played some good teams this year. They've just been beaten really badly by all of them. I think this Weber State team will bounce back, and I wouldn't be surprised at all if they bounce back with a real big win here.
One more game that we want to hit on here for this week. We'll go all the way out to the 6th coming up here on Saturday. This one, a couple more household names in the ACC between Clemson and Louisville. You know, obviously, it's going to be dependent on the number here for this one. I think this is more one of those games that you're looking at in terms of future ramifications. But to you, this is one of those measuring stick games for Clemson that they need to get.
Yeah, you know, Clemson hasn't been to the NCAA tournament since Brad Brownell's first season, I believe it was, in 2012, and 2011, actually. So, yeah, I mean, it was a team that Oliver Purnell left. You know, they were 21-11 in Purnell's last year. Brownell takes over the team. They go to the NCAA tournament in the first year, and they haven't been back since. Now, they're 12-1 so far this year, but the MO of Clemson here in recent seasons has been to start out really, really well. They only had two losses before January last year, and then they finished 17-16. So we're going to see what Clemson's really made of here. You know, they played Boston College on the road earlier in the week here on Wednesday, and that's a tricky game as well. And then they play Louisville here. And to me, this is a game that Clemson has to win. Clemson's going to be favored in this game. You know, maybe 5 points, 4.5, 5 points, something like that. You know, Clemson's a team that the odds makers are going to be fairly high on. In Louisville, they're not as high on as they would have been in the past. You know, coaching change, a lot of questions around the Louisville program. To me, this is one of the spots where Clemson has to win this game. You know, do I really want to bet this game? No, not really. This is one of them where I want to find out about both teams. You know, Clemson's defense is good. Their 10th in defensive efficiency so far this year. Is their offense good enough to win games like this? Because Louisville really plays defense well as well. You know, they're 23rd so far this year, so they're certainly not as good as they have been in the past. Last year they were 8th. 2 years ago they were 2nd. You know, obviously losing a coach like Rick Pitino, it's hard to keep that same level of play. And like I said, there's been so many questions around them. Louisville's coming off that big blowout loss to Kentucky. You know, now they play Pittsburgh on Tuesday night, and then they go to Clemson at Florida State, at Virginia Tech. I think we're going to learn a lot about both of these teams here really soon. I think that Clemson is going to probably be an NCAA tournament team this year, but, you know, this is the type of game where we find out for sure because, you know, Clemson in these spots in the past few years, you know, when they've been a short favorite at home against teams that they really could take advantage of and get a nice program-building win, they've not come up on the right side of things. We'll see if they can in this one.
Kyle Hunter from huntersportspicks.com. Good insights here on today's show. What's going on over at the website right now?
You know, just a really good run here lately in college basketball totals. Consider college basketball totals my specialty. 72 and 38 run here in college basketball totals. This week I'm doing a special as far as college basketball totals. I know a lot of people don't bet college basketball until football ends, or at least college football ends. So $375 gets you the rest of my college basketball totals for the rest of this season. If you're interested in that, KyleHunterSportsPicks.com or Twitter at KyleHunterPicks.
Well, man, I know you got a lot of things going on there. So, you know, good luck to you today. Best wishes to you and your family, man, and we'll talk to you again next week.
All right, thanks, man.
Good stuff there on today's show from Kyle Hunter of huntersportspicks.com. One more guest here as we open things up with a Tuesday edition of Bang the Book Radio. That is Mr. Joe Everett from NFL Draft Bible for our Week in Review and Wild Card Weekend Preview. Joe, how's it going today, man?
Going well. Week 17 was great. I think I got a lot of luck. And, yeah, I'm just excited for the playoffs. A lot of new teams, new faces, and should be a good show this weekend.
Well, that's the thing. I don't know what kind of show it's going to be. When you look at the lines that are out there in the betting market for the wild card weekend, Kansas City favored by anywhere from 8 to 9. The Rams are favored by 6 or 6.5 against Atlanta. Jacksonville favored by nearly double digits at some shops against Buffalo, anywhere from 7.5 to 9 out there in the market. And then New Orleans favored by 6, 6.5 against Carolina, a team that they've already beaten twice here so far this season. So, Joe, I mean, you know, these are some pretty significant lines here. And I mean, I guess it's not that big of a surprise. The sports books have been buried by favorites this year. We would expect favorite money to come in this week because it is the playoffs and people don't have college football to bet on anymore. Do you think that the quality of play is going to exceed what appears to be the market expectations?
It's certainly possible. I mean, even though they've set these lines where they are, you got a few teams that, well, one, definitely backed in and just, I'm not going to say mismatches, but clearly teams that are, you know, kind of in the opposite direction. So, yeah, I think it could happen that not only these favorites ended up covering, but I don't want to say blowouts like these college bowl games have been, but just I think definitely a couple of teams that just, you know, shouldn't be here. And, you know, last year was last year, this year is this year kind of thing, especially for the Falcons.
All right, so let's talk here about these games specifically. We're going to rely on your talent and evaluation and scouting background to help us out, picking out some mismatches here in these games, maybe some good betting angles to look at. We'll go ahead and start at Arrowhead on Saturday afternoon. Tennessee takes on Kansas City. As I mentioned, the Chiefs, largely an 8-point favorite out there in the market. There's an 8.5 and a 9 out there as well. But for all intents and purposes, Kansas City, more than a touchdown favorite, against the Tennessee team that had to win to get in last week, took care of business, but it really wasn't all that pretty.
No, not at all. And, like, you know, we were breaking that game down. It's like, you know, you can't have any confidence that they would get it done. But I think that was just that situation where Jacksonville's like, you know, we've got some real business ahead of us, and we'll let Tennessee have their little party, because I think this should be brutal. Here, Tennessee just doesn't have much outside the passing game of Delonte Walker, and that's unfortunate because I was a huge Corey Davis supporter, but it's just, you know, he is a bit raw. The injury hampered him, slowed him down, and wherever DeMarco Murray is with his injury, it's the running game is going to have to be carried by Derrick Henry. He's just going to have a monster game to get the edge on Kansas City scoring, because, I mean, the Chiefs on offense, I don't want to say, you know, lock or anything, but I'm positive the Chiefs are going to score in the 30s here, no matter what the temperature is. I don't care what the weather forecast. I guess it's 30s or what. I don't care if it's snowing. The Titans' soft-shell defense is not stopping Travis Kelce. Those linebackers can't run with him. Tyreek Hill's speed will be a problem for their secondary. And, you know, Kareem Hunt's no slouch. He's finally gotten back to where he was at the beginning of the season. I don't know. I'm seeing a score fest for Kansas City. Like I said, that secondary, this is that team that backed into the playoffs, and I think we're going to find out why Saturday at the start of things.
Yeah, when I wrote this preview up yesterday morning at bangthebook.com, Kansas City was favored by a touchdown with extra juice or 7.5. It's not like we've lost a ton of line value, because 8's not really a key number. I mean, if you could have gotten the 7 with extra juice, you know, that would look pretty decent at this point. But, you know, Joe, as I was breaking this game down, I don't see any edges for Tennessee. I mean, yeah, this isn't a very good Kansas City defense. And when you look at things from a yards per play standpoint, they are the worst defense in the postseason. And it's really not even that close. 0.2 yards per play worse than New Orleans. New Orleans ranked 23rd in that department. Kansas City ranked 27th. So I do think as Kansas City advances here in the playoffs, that bad defense is going to be a pretty big problem for them. But Tennessee, one of three teams in the NFL with a negative touchdown interception ratio, of course, the only one to make it into the playoffs. You mentioned this on last week's show. You think that Derrick Henry is an upgrade to DeMarco Murray, and that certainly could be the case. But the problem is with the skill position guys, Tennessee has one in Delanie Walker that you could really count on with regularity. And if they fall behind in this game and they have to throw the football, they're totally screwed. I mean, it's going to be hard enough to go on the road to Arrowhead against the Kansas City team. It's gotten things figured out here over the last few weeks. This is just a bad, bad matchup for Tennessee pretty much all around. I mean, I love what Adoree Jackson's done developing on the defensive side. Kevin Byard, maybe the best storyline in the NFC or in the AFC South this year with how he's developed in his second year out of Middle Tennessee State. But man, I don't see how the Titans can be competitive for 60 minutes in this game. I think this is one that just gradually gets away from them, and then as they have to put it on Mariota's shoulders, it just gets worse.
Yeah, I really, defense an issue for both teams. These are two teams that can't rush the passer, so I wouldn't fault anybody for taking an over there. But yeah, it's I think the Chiefs are just going to keep scoring, and the Titans just won't be able to answer back. Like you mentioned, it's Delonte Walker, Derrick Henry, and then what else do they have besides that? And yeah, that's just the absence of the pass rush. The holes in their secondary are going to show up. That's just kind of unfortunate, because you'd like to see maybe a Chargers team in this situation or another team. But, you know, it is what it is. Tennessee won the games they had to win.
Well, and one last thing we'll talk about here with this game, and this is very pertinent to this one, is the coaching edge for the Kansas City Chiefs. I mean, we talked about it last week in terms of the Titans. We've talked about it several times here with Mike Mularkey and Terry Rubisky, and how, you know, none of this stuff seems to be a great fit for Marcus Mariota and the skill set that he has. Dick LeBeau, you know, kind of becoming a bit of an antique in the NFL when it comes to the scheme that he likes to run. And you've got Andy Reid on the other side, and even young offensive coordinator Matt Nagy, who, you know, called a great game last week for Pat Mahomes, let him go out there and sling it around the yard, and he had success with that. But there's just such a big coaching edge here in this game as well. When you've got a talent edge, when you've got a coaching edge, when you've got Arrowhead in the playoffs and the full three, maybe even 3.5 borderline for that home field advantage, just none of this adds up to a good spot for Tennessee. And maybe they do show up. Maybe they do, you know, figure some things out to get Mariota with some moving pockets and, you know, take advantage of those slower linebackers for the Chiefs. But I feel like if you're Bob Sutton and Andy Reid, you're going to have something to combat that. You're going to focus on that here this week with the prep for your team, because you're not worried about big plays. Tennessee doesn't generate a lot of big plays, 5.2 yards per play on the season, because they run the ball so much. So I just feel like, you know, the Titans are just, they don't have a heavy enough arsenal to come and play with Kansas City here. And no, you never want to lay more than a touchdown in the NFL playoffs, but I can't find a compelling case for taking the Titans here.
Oh, and I wouldn't, and I agree with the coach and edge, because you got two assistants that are potential head coaches right now being discussed as candidates for other jobs. And I don't look at that as a distraction, because they really haven't, they won't take interviews until after the postseason. This is, yeah, just a better run team. And yeah, there's really, I mean, just no excuse to want a Titans ticket at this point. Adoree Jackson, their most explosive player being used on offense, just tells you how far behind they are on the perimeters at wide out right now. And just, you know, they're grasping for straws on offense, and it's showing.
All right, let's take a look at this Falcons versus Rams game. And you know, I think Carolina-New Orleans is probably the best game of the weekend from a talent and an intrigue. Well, not from an intrigue standpoint, because I think this game is the most intriguing. I think Carolina-New Orleans could wind up being the best game of the weekend. But the Rams are favored by 6.5 here in this spot. Atlanta coming off of that must-win game where they took care of business against Carolina. Now they go all the way out to the West Coast to take on the Rams. And Joe, I feel like as I'm looking through this one, I've got a pretty clear opinion on the side. So before I lay that out for everybody, I want to hear your take on both this line and this matchup.
Lean Rams here. I mean, first off, but the matchup, I mean, I look at a Falcons team that just got up for a big game win and we're in, and against a Rams team that basically rested up on defense big time. So the Falcons, they have to score, and that worries me. I mean, the coaching advantages we like to talk about, I'm looking at Wade Phillips versus Steve Sarkisian. That I'll take the son of bum there basically any day of the week. The Rams, I think they've got the advantage in coverage there. Like, you know, their linebackers are two basically former safeties in college. They've one of the best players in the league, Aaron Donald. I mean, look out if Robert Quinn gets going. So, yeah, I think with Matt Ryan, they're going to have their hands full on that side. And the real question is if Falcons get their run game going, then they've got a case. But outside of that, I like the matchup. Julio Jones, Tremaine Johnson, they've got a corner that can really kind of match up and run with Julio there. So I'm not going to say he's going to take him out of the game, but that might just slow him down enough. And on the other side, I don't see the Falcons stopping Todd Gurley. They've got good team speed at linebackers, some safeties, and Robert Alford's playing really well in that last Falcons game. His hair was on fire, I can say that much. But I think the real problem there is, again, another team that's just having consistent problems consistently rushing the passers, the Falcons. Vic Beasley may have had a few highlight reel plays, but it's just not happened week to week, and I don't trust that part of it. So I look at the Rams coming out on top here, and right now Todd Gurley playing so well, the great mix they've got on the sidelines with McVay and Phillips, I'd have a tough time going away from that there.
All right, I'm going to be on the other side of you here in this one. I like Atlanta in this spot. When you look at this team, you look at the body of work, you look at how far they've fallen off from last season in a lot of respects, this team still found a way to win 10 games. They were third in yards per play with 5.9. They were 15th in points. So obviously that points to some pretty big problems in the red zone. Now, of course, you can argue back and forth whether or not you think that, you know, that's something that really shows up here in this one-game sample size. And it's obviously something I'd be very worried about as a Falcons backer, because if you're going to go and get 3 instead of 7, probably not going to help yourself too much here in the postseason. I know Matty Ryan didn't seem to fit as well with Steve Sarkisian as he did with Kyle Shanahan. And quite frankly, I mean, who would? Because Kyle Shanahan is a guy that, you know, if you play the Bang the Book radio drinking game, you're hammered every time Joe and I are on the air, because we talk about Kyle Shanahan all the time. But, you know, I kind of wonder a little bit here, too. With the Rams, you've got an offensive coordinator in Sean McVay who's been through the playoff song and dance, but only as an offensive coordinator, not as a head coach. You've got a second-year starting quarterback in Jared Goff who, not only has he not played many big games in the NFL, he didn't play many big games in college either, because it's not like Cal was out there playing for national championships or playing in any significant bowl games or anything like that. So that worries me quite a bit here with the Rams. You know, what game plan does McVay come up with to take the pressure off of Jared Goff? If it's running the ball with Todd Gurley, I certainly get it, but the Falcons have Deion Jones and Keanu Neal, two of the better run stoppers at the premium positions in the NFL. Are those holes there for Gurley? Is Roger Saffold healthy enough to play? You know, and even in a game like this, when you start talking about the playoffs, you start talking about momentum swings, which obviously momentum didn't mean a whole hell of a lot in the Rose Bowl yesterday. But when you start talking about momentum swings and all those types of things, does the fact that Greg the Leg is out for the Rams, you know, really, really hurt this team? If they get into position to get points, come away with nothing, you know, it's a big win for the Falcons, and we know that they can move the ball on offense. So I feel like there are a lot of concerns that I have with the Rams here, to the point where if I had to get invested in this game, and I think I eventually will, catching Atlanta at 6 even money or 6.5 out there does look pretty attractive to me.
You know, you get the touchdown eventually, maybe Rams money comes in. I wouldn't, you know, complain there or fault anybody for taking that side, because the one aspect you bring up, there's a lot of unproven with the Rams side of things. Goff, McVay, how they react to the postseason first time in. But there sure are a lot of veterans on that defensive side that I think are going to keep them in this. But, yeah, this game as a whole, a lot of intrigue going in. And yeah, it's a tough line to cover, I'm sure, because, like, once again, home field advantage, what is it really for the Rams? How is that going to happen in the postseason? I'm not so sure how the divide in the crowd is going to be. And, yeah, you're taking a chance if you're going Rams. But, boy, it's like you say, momentum. Boy, Todd Gurley is just a snowball going down the side of a mountain. He's just picking up steam and getting stronger as he gets down to the bottom. So I guess that's the aspect I'm looking at. I hate to step in Todd Gurley's way right now.
One other thing I'll look at here is the total on this game's dropped from 49.5 to 48.5. And when you look at these two teams and you look at how the Rams were the highest scoring offense in the NFL this year, you look at the Falcons and all the talent that they have on offense. And like I said, they moved the football. They just didn't capitalize when they moved the football into the red zone. They were at 50% in the red zone, which if you've got Julio Jones, that is a fireable offense as far as I'm concerned. The Rams, yeah, they led the NFL in points, but they were 55.1% in the red zone. So they weren't all that great either. Two pretty good red zone defenses here. The move down on the total may surprise some people because you've got, you know, Goff versus Ryan, you've got McVay and Sarkisian, you've got Gurley and Coleman and Freeman and, you know, all these skill players that can really play. This could be a game, though, where the defenses do win out. And honestly, I'm a little bit surprised to see the side going up while the total comes down because, you know, obviously there's a correlation there in terms of wanting to take the underdog with a lower total. So if this total continues to come down, I think we may see some Atlanta money come in for the simple fact that these are two teams that may be settling for attempts at 3 points. And these are two teams that may run the ball a lot. It seems like Sarkisian, relative to Kyle Shanahan last year, has really prioritized the run. We know Todd Gurley's going to run a lot. The Rams, not great from a yards per carry standpoint. They were the second worst. The Falcons, they gave up their share of running yards as well. Running clock, problems in the red zone. Maybe this is a low-scoring game as well.
You know, it could be, and there's two defenses right there with talent on them. The Rams, you know, we already talked about them at both all phases there. The Falcons, too, so that explains a lot. And, you know, for folks that just look at points per game and their scoring average, yeah, these are two high-scoring teams. But, yeah, in a game like this, all the scheming that's done by two pretty good defensive minds here, that actually makes a lot of sense. And I think that's a fair prediction, too, that if that happens, you probably see that you won't see as many plus sixes around for those Falcons.
All right, let's go to Sunday here. And this is a matchup that, quite frankly, on paper doesn't look very good. I mean, I think that there are some great storylines for this game. I will admit that I even almost choked up a little bit watching Bills fans celebrate what happened there with the end of that Cincinnati and Baltimore game because, A, I know what it's like to be from a town that's been, you know, kicked in the gonads at every possible turn when it comes to sports, but also because it's just great to see that type of passion for people that get ridiculously hammered in the tailgate lot and jump through tables and, you know, I mean, kudos to Bills Mafia here, and I'm sure the party went very, very deep into the New Year's Eve and then onto the New Year's Day festivities as well. Now, as far as this game goes, though, you've got a Jacksonville team that has not played well the last 2 weeks, and there are already concerns and questions about this team, not on the defensive side, because that's great. The offensive side, anytime you've got Blake Bortles, you're going to worry, and Leonard Fournette just has not had that same explosiveness, has not really been healthy since the middle of the season. They're expected to cover more than a touchdown here against a Buffalo team that, you know, statistically just doesn't look very good. I mean, it's a Buffalo team that had 4.8 yards per play. They were well into the negative in that department. They were outscored on the season pretty comfortably. I really don't know what to do with this game, to be honest with you, Joe.
Yeah, and it's like you mentioned, it's that number moving now. I mean, I don't know, lean Buffalo. I'd say just because of the magic they've got going, and you're not alone. I mean, just watching all those, watching Eric Wood, Kyle Williams with his kids, just everybody in that room's jacked up. It's just you want a feel-good story. There it is. It's happening in Buffalo. The real curse of this is, does LeSean McCoy play? How well does he play if he suits up? I mean, I almost have to guarantee he puts the dress on and goes out there and trots it out, even if he's, you know, just too banged up to play. He'll be there for the emotional lift that it'll give his teammates. But yeah, this whole offense is kind of Tyrod Taylor needs LeSean McCoy. McCoy needs Tyrod. That backside presence of Tyrod Taylor being there, it helps McCoy just in those reads. The defense just has to stay honest. And if you don't have both those guys at full strength, that's the worry that Jacksonville's defense, they got to have a snoot full for their first playoff game for a lot of these guys' brief careers here. Barry Church, Calais Campbell, and I think Malik Jackson, those guys definitely had some playoff experience. But as a whole group, this is special to them, too, on that side of the ball. So that's something that, that's difficult to gauge. Another, just a lot of question mark on both sides of the ball. And then the Jaguars, I think the real problem has showed up. I've faded this team the last few weeks because we've talked about it eventually. You can't hide Blake Bortles. He's going to have to win a game for you. And when that happens, I'll be glad to be on the other side of that. I mean, I think those games that they were able to hide him are just over and done with. So, yeah, Jacksonville, They're going to do their best to run this ball into the dirt, kill the clock, shorten the game, whatever you want to call it, and sneak into the next round. And I really do think they've got to think that way just because, like you mentioned, how poorly they're playing. There's some discord, people screaming at each other. Fournette's not running as strong as he was. I still think they've got a lot of capable backs there, but I hate to keep repeating myself, but it boils down to if you're expecting Bortles to save you from a tight spot, think again there for Jacksonville. So, yeah, it's a shame. I don't know what the number is now because I would probably love to get like a Bills plus 10. If I can get an altered line, pay some juice, that may be me for this one just because, you know, I do not believe in the Jags. If you wanted to take an under here, I wouldn't fault that. I'm expecting a bit of a defensive battle. 39.5 is pretty rough, but I lean Bills here just because of, yeah, the suspect Jaguars team that, yes, they had a great season. It's a great story. Good for them turning the things around. And total credit to Doug Marrone. I mean, his personality, that locker, like the whole team kind of has molded around him. They're a little blue collar, and I think they all kind of like it that way. So good thing they've got going, but it's a team I just don't like. There's still, you know, holes for the Jaguars.
Well, in the report coming out from Adam Schefter here about a half hour ago, and we're, of course, recording this on Monday morning now as we actually hit the afternoon hour, LeSean McCoy, sprained ankle, a game-time decision and, quote, a close call. So yeah, that has a little bit to do probably with why this line is going up, why it's been adjusted, because for Buffalo here, if they don't have Shady McCoy, he was worth over 35% of their yards from scrimmage on the season in terms of accounting for 1,586 through the air and on the ground. So, you know, this is their offense. And he's been very, very good over the last several weeks. He was not good in week 17 against Miami, just 11 carries for 10 yards, and then wound up leaving the game. That's the big deal here because the Bills, I think there's kind of this perception out there that the Bills have this good defense. They had 17 takeaways in the first seven games of the year. Over their last nine games, they only had 8 takeaways. They've given up over 350 yards in the majority of their games since the week 6 bye. They've only held 4 opponents under 350 yards in that span. So that's, of course, over their last 11 games. So, you know, this is a defense that has had some problems. It's an offense that's very, very dependent on LeSean McCoy. And it's kind of a perfect storm right now where the defense isn't playing overly well. Jacksonville's offense is playing a little bit better. And then you've got this McCoy injury. So, you know, that's certainly a big-time problem from the set of circumstances standpoint for Buffalo. And, of course, we'll see if LeSean McCoy is able to play and if we get some more clarity on what the plan is with him. You know, I think at this line where it's currently sitting is with the expectation that McCoy doesn't play. So if McCoy is announced out and you scramble to go play Jacksonville, you probably aren't getting much line value on that anyway. So just something that our listeners want to pay attention to here as we look ahead to these games. One more game coming up in the wild card weekend. That is Carolina taking on New Orleans. When New Orleans won in Carolina earlier this year, they were favored, or Carolina was favored by 5. When the Saints won later in the year, just a few weeks ago, they were favored by 6 in a game that opened New Orleans minus 4 on December 3rd, well, prior to the December 3rd game. So the Saints took money that week, went from 4 to 6 through that dead zone. This number pops right there at 6. Up to 6.5, pretty much market wide now here at this point. Joe, you know, I think that this is the way that things should work out. You know, last week, if the Saints won, they won the division. They wound up not winning because Carolina lost, so they won the division anyway. Good to see these two teams have to play each other here this week in kind of a pseudo NFC South division title game.
No, this is the one that you're definitely looking forward to, and how wonderful they schedule it. Just have it at night, like the last one. This definitely looks to be worth waiting for. And I just look at the Saints team, though. They've got so much going for them. Those two running backs are healthy. Alvin Kamara, you know, I may have spoke too soon when I said he's got Rookie of the Year locked up, and then my guy Kareem Hunt right in the rear. I guess he sees pulls from behind and ends up leading the league in rushing there, probably just because Todd Gurley had to take the last week off. But all fairness aside, I think Kamara is just that dimension to the Saints team that the Panthers wish. That's kind of the underlying feature of this game. It's like the Panthers so wish Christian McCaffrey was Alvin Kamara. that's what they drafted so highly in the draft. And it looks like Kamara is that type of back, if not just a better version. So it's, you know, that'll be a battle, I think, between those two. So I think both teams will look to feature those players. It's just the answer that the Saints are going to have, a veteran passer like Drew Brees, this against that secondary, that's where it'll be decided. I think Michael Thomas shows up big in this game. It's sure, it's been a down year, maybe not what some expected, but they've just had so much success in the running game. I think that's part of it. And sure, maybe this isn't the greatest version of Drew Brees in his career, but I think they really come out to play in this game at home. That offensive line's healthy, and we've talked about it before, just a great draft the Saints had, and the difference in this defense. It's unfortunate that A.J. Klein's not playing and is on injured reserve, because that really, I mean, I think that would, like, totally seal the deal for me, just because of how well he had their coverages lined up, and just he was the green dot, the helmet communicator, head coach on the field. And the Saints defense, they'll definitely miss him. And I think the only reason you don't feel safe in this game is that element of Cam Newton. I don't care what you want to criticize about what he says. He is a knucklehead. Criticize how he dresses. He's a ham. But, man, there's no player like that in the NFL. I don't think there's ever been that's been this accomplished a passer and this much of a threat to run. That long gain where he just pulled an okey-doke on Andrew Sandejo against the Vikings and just pay dirt for 50, 60 yards. I don't know how many yards, but, like, who does that at that size? That's the element of mystery. That's what makes this game a great game. And just Newton's presence is the only reason I'm not just banging the table for the Saints and the touchdown. But I think that as it gets to game time, I'll probably have a New Orleans ticket.
I think New Orleans is definitely the way to go here in this game. And up until the Kansas City line moved, and of course, with it still being at -8 at some shops, I think Kansas City, New Orleans teasers are going to be extremely popular among recreational bettors here this week. So that is something to keep in mind. And when we have Brent from DSI on later in the week, and he talks about, you know, the wager counts and the money, that factors in straights, teasers, parlays, all that type of stuff. I think you definitely see New Orleans and Kansas City as two very popular teaser sides here. And I can't blame anybody for not just taking New Orleans on the teaser, but outright taking New Orleans here -6.5. If you look at this game statistically, this is a massive mismatch. I know both of these teams went 11-5, so that's great. But Carolina was outgained by 0.3 yards per play this year. They only had 5 yards per play offensively, and they went 11-5. Like, that just doesn't line up to me. That just doesn't add up well. I know the Panthers have a pretty decent defense. You've got Kuechly and Davis, who are very good. You've got Ron Rivera, who's a good head coach and a guy that's had playoff success before. But this is a Saints team that led the league with 6.3 yards per play. Drew Brees only threw the ball this time or this year 536 times, his lowest total since 2009. He's 38 years old. If he had to go out there and throw the ball 650, 700 times like he has in past years, maybe there's some fatigue here. But With the development of this running game, with Ingram and Kamara and those easy throws out into the flat, Drew Brees has just been sitting in a catbird seat all year long. You know, make a few throws to Michael Thomas, and that's that. You know, if Brees needs to come out here and do something, he's ready to go. You know, this is a guy that's been able to monitor his workload throughout the season. I think that's really helpful for them. You know, the Saints' pass defense has gotten so much better with some of the decisions that they've made in the draft. Talk about getting a guy like Marshon Lattimore, developing those guys in that back seven. You know, so I don't think Carolina's going to have much success throwing the football here. New Orleans has already won these two meetings. And by the way, you know, a lot of people like to talk about beating a team 3 times in one season. You'll hear that in college basketball. Occasionally you hear it in the NFL when teams do run into each other in the playoffs. But it's happened 20 times since 1970. The team that's won the first two meetings is 13-7. So not a long-term trend, certainly a small sample size dating back, you know, the 38 years now. But still, sometimes a team is just a lot better than the other team. And I think that's the case here for New Orleans. Again, I could be wrong. Cam Newton finds ways to get it done. Obviously, Carolina finds ways to get it done at 11-5 with a marginal point differential and a negative yards per play differential. But, man, New Orleans is the side for me here.
Yeah, you know, it took the words right out of my mouth. Sometimes a team's just better. Sometimes a team just has your number that particular season. And Sean Payton been coaching against Ron Rivera for a long time. And, like, I just think the Panthers at one point are just going to be out of numbers. Devin Funchess, great season, no doubt about it. But I think Lattimore versus Funchess, that's a very intriguing matchup to watch. That's your premium. And then Olsen, I think, was rushed back. Watching that last Panthers game, he's definitely not 100%. Where's Jonathan Stewart at? If Cam Newton doesn't play out of his mind in this game and McCaffrey doesn't go off, they're not in it. And I don't see any other outcome where the Saints don't win this one.
So we've got one college football game left. We've got four NFL this week, four NFL the next week, two NFL the following week, and then the Super Bowl. So only 11 games left of the NFL season. One of the things that we will do here throughout February, or the rest of January, February, and March, is, of course, get you ready for the upcoming college football and NFL seasons. We know that with the accelerated timelines now out at South Point in Las Vegas, and then Five Dimes generally picks up the college football season win totals in late April or mid-May in that type of range. We know that you really need to be doing your prep work well in advance if you want to take both of those leagues seriously. So we want to touch for a little bit here on what could happen in 2018, sort of put the cart in front of the horse a little bit. And Joe, I know you wanted to touch here on the Colts coaching search with Chuck Pagano, as we all expected, relieved of his duties.
I've been waiting so long, and it's finally time. I want to hear the UFC guy scream, "It's time," because I think the Colts should be one of the best jobs out there. If you're a potential coach, you got to be looking at them. I mean, outside of the owner, who's a bit of a hot mess right now, but Andrew Luck has that mystery cloud. I expect him to be back, and I still look at him as one of the better prospects that's come out. I mean, this guy wants to win, and he may have just been waiting for Pagano to get out of the way this whole last season. I wouldn't put it past him. I mean, his father, Oliver, probably took him aside and was like, "This season, no. Next year, yes." I think the whole staff can. So, really, there's pieces. I mean, Malik Hooker, I believe, is a star. There's some glue guys they found in that secondary this year. Where Quincy Wilson goes year two, we'll see. But they've obviously got to address O-line, D-line. Pass rushing linebacker needs to be, those are probably your draft areas, but they've got a high pick. They've got a good group of wide receivers. I don't love them, but I like them. And Jack Doyle, I think, solid. Look out for Marlon Mack next season. So, yeah, these candidates, I read it. There was a bad year for head coaching candidates. I have to disagree. I mean, I'm looking at Josh McDaniels, OC for the Patriots, the Nagy guy. He's the offensive coordinator, Matt Nagy. He's got to be a consideration just because our GM, Chris Ballard, here is, his background in Kansas City. That's got to be an easy favorite to pick out. Chris Richard from the Seahawks, and then Mike Vrabel, I think, is another real possibility. And I'm thinking they might go defensive coordinator. That's like kind of the line. The one surprise here is I haven't heard anything about Jim Schwartz in Indianapolis, which is, I think that's frustrating because he's going to be somebody's head coach next year. And really, I thought the problem with him and the Lions was more front office than Schwartz is doing. That guy still in my mind is a defensive guru and just a one of those types. Just like McDaniels, like waiting for that second opportunity, probably has a book ready to get, here's where I went wrong, this is how I'm going to change things, and this is how I'm going to do it. And both of those guys strike me as guys that, hey, if I get that second chance, if I am lucky enough, I'm doing it my way, and it's just going to go this way. And I just think both of those two, they're really poised, and I guess that's where I'm getting at. I really hope McDaniels is the pick here, because that would be such a welcome change in this town, because the coach we've had here just stuck to his game plan. I mean, just banged his head against a brick wall, same attack, same scheme, no matter the opponent. Whereas McDaniels, he could take advantage of the matchups. It would be situational coaching each week, differentiating on opponent. They'd go in at halftime, even if they were losing, and make those just changes. He would switch it up and find what works. And I think that's been just a huge problem with the whole Pagano era. It's just the same thing, both halves, and that's why I think it personified this year, especially with blowing all those first half leads. It's just clearly they did not make the changes. They didn't alter anything, and they didn't look at what just happened in the first half. So I hope it's McDaniels. If it's Matt Nagy, that's fine. But really, it's just there's a lot of good, I think, potential HCs out there for the Colts to pick from. And like I said, we're talking about teams in 2018. If they got McDaniels and Andrew Luck is back out there slinging the pigskin, that's just going to be a good combo. I mean, that's going to be a team you're going to want to back. McDaniels would stick with the same 3-4 defense. It'd be, I think, a nice transition. And that's whoever the Colts get, that's a team you definitely want to look at saying, they're not that far off from a winning record. There's some elements of this team that you could see they start covering a bunch of games. Don't be surprised next season. And it's just a team also that really desperate need for a culture change.
Well, and McDaniels obviously makes sense too, because your safety net is Jacoby Brissett, and he's very, very familiar with Jacoby Brissett from their time together in New England. So if Andrew Luck can't come back, you give Brissett somebody that he's comfortable with, a playbook and verbiage that he's comfortable with. You know, that's something I think that would really help Jacoby Brissett too, if he has to be the guy of the future here for the Colts. And I mean, you know, maybe depending on what we find out about Andrew Luck between now and April, maybe there's a quarterback on the board there at number three that the Colts wind up going with. But you know, even so, if that's the case, and McDaniel's not a bad guy to have with him either. So that is one that makes a whole lot of sense. One thing that is really interesting to me, and we'll kind of move on and talk about the Oakland Raiders here, who appear to be hiring John Gruden, is that there are a lot of intriguing candidates, and there are some really good names out there. I think John DeFilippo to Chicago is a very, very interesting one that I've seen talked about. I've also seen Matt Patricia rumored to Detroit, which I don't love Matt Patricia as a defensive coordinator, let alone as a head coach, but you know, you're going to see teams be really aggressive with this because there are a lot of openings out there that need to be filled, and I'm stunned that there's not an opening in Cleveland, but you know, teams have to be aggressive to get the guys that they want. So they may have to, you know, do these interviews in very, very short order. Then you start running into the, you know, logistical problems of coordinators with playoff teams getting interviews. You know, when can they go? Are they allowed to? Do they get permission? That's a whole big puzzle to figure out here this year as well. So, you know, maybe that kind of segues into the Raiders allegedly going with John Gruden and getting him back into the coaching ranks. And honestly, Joe, I don't know about this move, to be totally honest with you.
I don't know. I mean, Gruden's being back in the black is kind of a good thing. It's not in the Bay Area anymore, but for this team, he was a rock star. And the big knock on it is you fire a guy in Del Rio who really, I mean, he embraced this job. He was all about it. Childhood team, missed California kid, went to USC. So that is a bitter parting of ways, but I don't know. It's a similar makeup to what he had. The only downside is we already know what his favorite play is. A spider two white banana will be scouted, Gruden. So ready for that. And look at the makeup, though. Similar personnel. I think Derek Carr, a deceptively mobile quarterback, not necessarily a real threat, but he's nifty. He's got that intermediate accuracy, not a strong arm, but he can place that ball. He throws well on the run, and he's a real leader. To me, that sounds like Rich Gannon, who they're talking about being the quarterback's coach already. Two veteran receivers. I mean, Crabtree's coming off that rough season, but I still believe that he is a great player. I think he was just playing through a really gnarly knee injury the whole year, a lot of compensating for that, which resulted in not only the drops, but just some poor play, not getting open. But, you know, similar receivers, Tim Brown, Jerry Rice, Crabtree, Amari Cooper. Look out, where's Charlie Garner? I don't know. The one worry I have is Marshawn Lynch, his style, his approach to the game, beast mode, how that it potentially could clash with Gruden. I'm not sure, but I'd look for a mix of things. Like you're going to see a lot of big fronts back with just kind of what he did at Tampa, you know, similar to what Harbaugh did in San Francisco or Stanford, big beefy fronts, jumbo packages, pulling guards. You know, he really loved two tight ends. I mean, 12, 22, 23 personnel is what we're going to see. A lot of two, three tight ends out there, keeping opponents guessing. And, I mean, Gruden does a lot of the same stuff. I mean, it's Andy Reid, the Holmgren playbook, except with the difference of Gruden, he would tweak his book so much, master of disguise. There's so many different formations that's kind of his art, if you will. And I think that's what I'm kind of glad that we're going to see a lot of. I mean, that guy really, he does work hard in the film room and installing offense. It's what he's known for. So I'm happy that's back, but boy, I'm going to miss him in the booth more than anything. That really made it cool. And it's so funny. You never appreciate something until it's gone. I was one of the people making fun of some of the things he'd say on live broadcast, but man, breaking down the X's and O's, he was really good for that. And it doesn't matter who you get to replace a John Gruden up there in that booth. It's just going to be a step down. I just don't care who it is. That he really was great for the telecast. And more than anything, and I know listeners will agree with this, that Gruden QB camp will not be around this year for the draft cycle. And as a fan of, I mean, the draft, I'm sorely going to miss that one. That was a really nice insight to what's going on in a quarterback's mind, and then just kind of how a real coach, a real NFL knowledge person would break them down on the chalkboard. So, excuse me, the whiteboard now, you know, it's pointing out the flaws and where he's ready. Go ahead and give me a cadence. And I mean, scream it out right now. You don't get that on any other show. So that one really, that's going to be tough not to have this season. I mean, when he asked Colt McCoy if he yodeled, I lost it that year. I thought that was the greatest thing ever. So it's too bad that's going away. But, yeah, as far as the Raiders going forward, I think it's a little bit of a good thing for the offense. I'm not so sure what they're going to do with the defense, if they're going to keep going with this USC version, whatever they're trying to do. But I've got high hopes for Gruden. I think initially, though, year one, but as we talked about, there's a lot of complexities to what Gruden did. Many formations, many different sets. I wouldn't be surprised to see a struggle year one trying to change all that on offense, what they're going to have to do. But eventually, I would hold faith if I was a Raider fan. I mean, they're going to score some points, that's for sure. And I think that mix, Derek Carr and Gruden, that could be a nice little combo, because I don't know, Derek Carr, he's not the world's greatest passer or anything, but he's classy, he's tough, he's a pro. You could have a lot worse situations as far as a marriage between head coach and quarterback there.
Well, we'll touch a lot more on these coaching situations and some teams for 2018 as we go throughout the next few weeks with Joe Everett from NFL Draft Bible. Joe, what's going on over at the Bible right now?
Oh, well, it's a big month. We're going to have boots on the ground. It looks like all three of the main all-star events. Rick Saratello, the Prez, he's going to be out at the NFLPA game in L.A. And then our small school guru, Christian Schanefelt, he's going to be down in Florida for the Shrine. And, of course, I'll be down in Mobile, Alabama at the end of the month for the Senior Bowl. So if you want your all-star news, you got to keep it dialed in. We've got our daily scouting reports, Inside the War Room series, and then our podcast is piping up as well. We'll be on this Thursday and every Thursday, for that matter, just to preview national championship game, players to watch. So, yeah, bringing you the names you need to know since 2002. Check it out, NFLDraftBible.com.
And you can follow Joe on Twitter at Joe W. Everett, and then NFL Draft Bible is at NFL Draft Bible. Joe, thank you so much for your time, man. We appreciate it. We'll talk to you again next week.
All right, will do.
Great stuff there on today's show with Joe Everett and also with Kyle Hunter of huntersportspicks.com. Before I tell you what's coming up the rest of the week here on Bang the Book Radio, we just want to remind our listeners the World Junior Hockey Championship is still going on. If you're looking for something to watch here tonight, maybe you're not a big NBA or college basketball fan, check that out. USA plays Russia on NHL Network tonight at 8 o'clock in the World Juniors. Love that tournament. One of my favorite events of the year. Lots of exuberance, lots of talent. It should be a real great one to watch. If you get a chance to check that out tonight, please make sure that you do. Tomorrow on our Wednesday edition of Bang the Book Radio, Brian Leonard from WagerTalk.com and also Wes Reynolds will join us. Thursday, Brad Powers from BradPowersSports.com, Rolf Michaels from WagerTalk.com. Friday, we're going to wrap up the Super Contest. I believe I'm going to be recording a quick segment with Rounding again, who won a couple of years ago. Going to get his thoughts on, you know, what's going on with the Super Contest going forward, the traditional versus gold format, all that type of thing. Should be a good way to wrap things up with the 2017 Super Contest. And then Brent from DSI Sportsbook with this week's version of the odds report. That'll do it for me. Thank you so much for listening, everybody, and I will talk to you again tomorrow.